Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Real Sports Talk Radio, courtesy of...
I think my goal for, or I guess my New Year's wish for 2013 is to get rid of that stupid entrance, which of course has nothing to do with the Seth and Sean show. Although tonight it is only the Seth show. And since Mr. Palmer is unable to attend, he has a goodbye party for an old coworker. So for the first time in probably since I started the show, I believe in September of 2011, and since Sean became a permanent member beginning of the year, I'm running this one solo. Should be interesting. Everyone says how big a mouth I have, and it's probably true. So I'm going to talk a little bit of everything tonight. A little football. A little baseball, just in regards to R.A. Dickey. We may touch on a little boxing, a little whatever. Normally, we have the last couple of months, we haven't really encouraged the calls, just for whatever reason, not sure. But I'd rather have people calling in today to talk. There's obviously a lot going on. Guest call-in number is 760-283-0846. And we start off with the wonderful city that I live in, New York, which probably could not have gone through a worse sports weekend. We start off, and this is pretty innocuous, is Jeremy Lin comes back to the city that made him the cover athlete for Time Magazine and leads his new team, the Houston Rockets, over the Knicks, 109-96. Second time in a couple weeks that the Rockets have been able to run roughshod over the Knicks, who have been obviously cruising through the first quarter of the season. Extraordinarily impressive. Not that that really changes anybody's opinion on whether Lin should have stayed or should not have stayed, but he's a very difficult person not to root for. He's a class act. Whether you like his game, don't like his game, he certainly brought New York, and really brought the NBA to its feet for a magical couple of weeks earlier in the year, much earlier in the year. And playing with James Harden, it's not a backcourt that's ready to really go far yet. But what happens, they're both speedy, they both like to shoot. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if Lin ends up being sixth man on the team down the line. But, you know, you got to give, you know, people are giving him grief as they did last year. This is his second year. This is his first year as a definitive starter. Let's give him some time. On to more important, only because they're more relevant. They're more relevant because of the playoff season. The Giants needed three wins to clinch the NFC East, and we're only short by 34 points. Not the greatest effort. And the big question is, what has happened to this great D-line led by Justin Tuck and O.C. Umanyora and Chris Canty and, you know, my personal player, defensive player of the year in the preseason, Jason Pierre-Paul? This team got annihilated by a good but still not great Atlanta team. And the comment that keeps coming back, and it's true, Atlanta's a good regular season team. They've been in the playoffs the last 2 years and lost by approximately 70-23. Do something in the playoffs, and we'll go from there. Until then, it's irrelevant. But for the Giants, they got a problem because they are now in a three-way tie for the NFC East with the Washington Redskins and the Dallas Cowboys. The Cowboys, I don't even know how the Cowboys are still in this, to be perfectly honest. They did play one of their better games of the year and beat Pittsburgh in overtime after a Roethlisberger interception by Brandon Carr, who returned it to the one, and then Dan Bailey kicked the field goal to win the game 27-24 in overtime. Roethlisberger and Todd Haley, the offensive coordinator, had some words. You know, Mike Tomlin has now said they're all on the same page. I don't know. This seems like a team a little bit in disarray. Rashard Mendenhall, the longtime running back, was suspended for the game. He will be back. But it's a team – it's a conference with really seven teams going for six spots. And it's kind of looking more and more like they may be the seventh team. It will come down to Cincy – it looks like it's going to come down to Cincy, Pittsburgh in Week 16. And the winner of that will probably be in the playoffs. But neither team, although Cincy's been on a nice run, looks like they're going to go too far. And then we have, and as bad as the Giants were, and they were terrible, what's happening with the Jets is just sad. I was talking with some people last night about this. This may be the most, they're not the worst team in recent memory, but they may be the most boring. I mean, think about those Jets teams with Rich Kotite, 1-15, and then I think they were 3-13 the following year. They won 4 games in 2 years. At least there was no expectation. This is just horrifying to watch. As I said a few weeks ago on the show, Mark Sanchez, to me, had plateaued last, you know, is obviously not only plateaued, but certainly regressed. His performance last night was an abomination. And, you know, the question was, why was he starting at this point? What had he done to really earn the job at this point? You know, people are talking about Greg McElroy, including myself. I also was not under the impression that under any circumstance this team was a playoff team. They have one of the worst offenses I've ever seen. I shouldn't say that, but go think about it. For a team that's 6-10, 7-9, whatever they're going to end up, you know, maybe 8-8. Look on the offensive side. Is there any team with less offensive talent than the New York Jets? You have a well below average quarterback, below average running back, starting running back in Sean Green. Your wide receivers, I think Jeremy Curley is a nice wide out. He'd be a solid number 3, a good slot guy. Antonio Holmes has been out for the season. Stephen Hill has fought injury and has been a bit disappointing. Dustin Keller, it just seems like he's just become a non-entity. The offensive line is good, but nothing spectacular. You don't have a position. I think you may have less talent on the Jets on the offensive side than any team in the NFL. You know, people talk about Cleveland. Well, Cleveland has Trent Richardson and Josh Gordon and even Brandon Wheaton to show some potential. Jacksonville. Well, they're certainly not pretty. But would you rather have Chad Henne or Mark Sanchez? I would rather have Sanchez. Cecil Shorts has actually come out of nowhere. Maurice Jones-Drew has had a tough year injury-wise, but he's Maurice Jones-Drew. Even St. Louis. I mean, I guess they're not St. Louis, they're Arizona. I forget. Although, of course, there is a team in St. Louis. Yes, their quarterback position is absolutely abominable, but they do have Larry Fitzgerald. Now, of course, they don't use him, which is why my fantasy teams are now dead. But that being said, there is no team in worse offensive shape, I believe, than the New York Jets. And this is a problem. Obviously, it's a problem. Obviously, it's a problem. The issue being, what exactly do you do? What do you do with this going forward? You have a GM who most likely is gone, an offensive coordinator who is most likely gone, a coach who's just not you can't be single faceted and be a head coach. I'm not saying you have to be Bill Walsh or Dan Coryell. But you have to have some offensive feel, I believe, or you have to develop some. And Ryan hasn't. And now you're stuck with a team, and you're really stuck with an interesting decision next year. And now I'm not talking about Mark Sanchez. Sanchez is going to be a backup somewhere next year. I can't imagine, even if he stays because of the ridiculous contract that Woody Johnson signed him to. The $20 million extension over 2 years, guaranteed. He's still not going to, most likely, at best, he would be in an open competition. My guess is he'll be a backup. I don't know if you can cut the $10 million. I happen to like Greg McElroy, but I'm not really sure he's the answer. Tim Tebow should never have been brought in. And, you know, the idea is if you bring in Tim Tebow, you use Tim Tebow in some regard. You don't run him 3 plays a game. It doesn't make any sense to me. And so what are you looking at? You know, the big decision they have to make is, what do you do with Darrelle Revis? Darrelle Revis is going to be going into his final year of his contract. Darrelle Revis is the best cornerback in football. He wants to be paid like the best cornerback in football. However, This is a team coming off, that does, it's not one player away from being a championship caliber. This is a team where their strength is a secondary. And what we've determined over the last couple of years is that a secondary is not exactly, a great secondary is not mandatory to be a championship caliber team. The Giants have never had a great secondary, not in the last 5 years, even back in the 86-90 years. They led by Mark Collins, these were not great secondaries. The Giants have always had great defensive linemen, great linebackers. They rush the passer, and that's the problem I have with the team this year is they just haven't done so. The Jets, Muhammad Wilkerson has been okay, is developed, but they need a lot of things. And I'm not sure giving Revis $20 million coming off an ACL injury is the right move. Now, the problem is it's not like you're going to be able to sign him after the year. If you don't sign him before the year, my guess is he will go, he becomes a free agent. My guess is he will not re-sign. So you're going to either have to take the chance on him being a full, being 100% recovered from an ACL, which, is possible. I mean, after the, when we look at the recovery of injuries this year in the NFL, I mean, there's three that come to mind, obviously Peyton Manning, Adrian Peterson, even Jamal Charles, have come back from really, really serious injuries. But it's a different kind. At some point, the cornerback – you can't be a great cornerback forever. Revis is 27, 28. He's certainly not past his prime. But if you can get a whole lot of draft picks, it's a couple players, it may be worth considering. And it's a problem. You know, this team is really just in the middle of nowhere. And I was talking about this with a couple weeks ago. What do you do on the quarterback situation? There's no, you're going to draft 14 or 15. Do you really want to go Matt Barkley, Geno Smith? Are you going to look at a Logan Thomas or a Mike Glennon in the second round? And we'll talk a little bit more about that, obviously, when we get to our NFL draft preview, but which is pretty far away. What do you do? Do you look to trade? Do you look to see if a Matt Flynn is available, an Alex Smith is available? Or do you do what I have a feeling that they're going to do? Because they're the New York Jets. And Woody Johnson hates not being the center of attention. And that's why they brought in some of the players they have. Tebow, the obvious, Brett Favre, Braylon Edwards. These are Plaxico Burress. These are big names at the end of their career. And there's a quarterback who my guess is will be cut after this season. He doesn't play too far away. And he doesn't even fit their offense. But I don't even know what their offense is going to be because I don't know who their coach is going to be. How surprised would you be to see Woody Johnson bring in Michael Vick next year? Wouldn't shock me in the slightest. Is it a good fit? Absolutely not. My guess, if Ryan's still the coach, and I think that's a 50-50 proposition at best, then it would be a horrible fit. But Ryan doesn't really – Ryan – has no credibility on the offensive side. And as sad as that sounds, I don't know how much his opinion is really going to matter in that role. It's a tough call. I'm curious to see what's going to happen, just as we all are. But on to some of the better stories of the football week. Well, I guess being down 58-0 is not, and then having a fake punt is really not a great story. Pete Carroll apologizing, he forgot. You're up 58. You're up 58-2. What are you doing? But it does lead to an enormous game next week, Seattle at San Francisco. Or maybe it's San Francisco at Seattle. I think it's San Francisco at Seattle. If the 49ers hadn't been able to hold on and hold off a monumental comeback by the New England Patriots. They were up 34-3. The game got tied. Or 31-3. And then Colin Kaepernick drove them down quickly, throwing a touchdown pass to Michael Crabtree. And San Francisco would go on to win 41-34 or 38-31 or whatever it was by a touchdown. Seattle is a dangerous team. I don't know how dangerous they are on the road. I'm not a big believer in rookie quarterbacks on the road. in any situation, but they're a different kind of team. They run the ball really well behind Marshawn Lynch. They have a good defense. The problem being their corners may be on drug suspension for 4 weeks. And that depending on who they play, most likely they'll be a 5 seed. It could be an issue, but that would, how funny would that be? 5 seed. So they would be playing most likely the NFC East division winner. Who are we looking at? The Giants, the Redskins, the Cowboys? No, those are winnable games. At the end of the day, I still do think the Giants are going to win this division. Maybe it's my blind optimism. Maybe it's my faith in this team, which hasn't warranted it this year, because I don't think I've ever seen a team flip-flop, go up and down so much. 2 weeks ago, 52-24 over New Orleans, knocking them out of the playoffs. And as we said, just a horrible exhibition last week on Sunday against Atlanta. The Redskins, I don't like giving credit to Mike Shanahan. Anyone who knows me or has listened to the show knows this. And I crushed him on the Kirk Cousins pick. I still don't think it was the right pick, because I thought Kirk Cousins was a starting QB. I am a college, as you guys know, I'm a pretty big college fan. I know I'm knowledgeable enough to know when you see a guy like him. I was surprised he fell to the fourth round. I was surprised that the Redskins took him, having taken, of course, RG3 in the first. And he came out, and he did exactly what you hope he would do. He threw for a couple hundred yards, 2 touchdowns, led him to win over a streaking Cleveland team, a game I thought they would lose. And now you have Redskins Cowboys coming up. I don't remember if that's 16 or 17. Probably 17, as the Giants play the Eagles in the 17. I think all division games are the 17th week of the season. And the Redskins are in the driver's seat. I don't think anyone can really believe in Dallas. The Giants are too inconsistent. And what a story it would be to see a Washington Seattle game, playoff rookie quarterback versus rookie quarterback. And you know what's going to happen after this year? They're going to trade Kirk Cousins. You know, maybe it'll be similar to the Matt Schaub, Kevin Cobb, where you draft a guy in the fourth round and you trade him for a high second round pick. It's not the worst thing in the world. And as I said, as much as I dislike giving credit to Mike Shanahan, this was a guy who won with the best quarterback and running back in football, a couple Super Bowls in the 90s, and then won one playoff game going forward. I wasn't overwhelmed, but we'll see what happens. And there's the other thought before we kind of leave the football. You know, I'm going to talk about Adrian in 2 weeks. We haven't just figured out our schedule. Next week obviously is going to be Christmas, so that's probably not going to happen. And the week after is New Year's. As much as I love you guys and I love doing this, man is not meant to spend New Year's Eve talking football. Well, actually, I really am. So maybe I will. Who knows? I'll have to talk to Sean about that. But there are a couple of choices. There is one other interesting situation in regards to the coaching. There is a name that's starting to be bandied about a little bit. He had a very unsuccessful run in the pros a few years ago. But after in a couple of weeks, he has the potential to have coached his third national championship in 4 years. And he is very popular in Cleveland. And again, he would be a pick where I would not be shocked to see the Jets again make a splash. And that's Nick Saban. I don't know if he's going to want all the power. I don't know if he's going to want the coach GM thing. I have no idea. And I know that the Alabama director AD has already said that this isn't going to happen. But you know, I take coaches' words as far as I can throw them. Speaking of coaches' words as far as I can throw them, everybody's favorite coach is back on the scene, Bobby Petrino. I guess he's gone for no more 25-year-olds. He has redeemed himself and prayed, and now he's back at Western Kentucky. There was no doubt he was going to get another job. The man is a weasel, but he is a great coach. And it's very simple. Anyone who leaves a post-it note saying he's quitting a team halfway through the season is not someone I would want coaching my team. And I don't know how you, between that, which he did in Atlanta, back in 2006, 2007, and what happened at Arkansas this year. I'm not sure how a parent is going to look at him and say, this is the guy who's going to raise my kid, who's going to coach my kid, who's going to get the best out of my kid. I don't see it. But, you know, that's really not my call. He is a name. He is a great offensive mind. And, you know, Western Kentucky did what they thought they had to do. So now we're in bowl season. Now, how many games do we really care about in bowl season? Well, it depends who you ask. As I said, I am a college football fan, so I care about some more than others, more than probably most do. If you're going to ask me, am I going to be sitting home on Thursday night watching the San Diego County Credit Union Poinsettia Bowl, BYU versus San Diego State? The answer is no. But there are some good games coming up this week. Washington, Boise State, in the Las Vegas Bowl. And again, I am not going to be sitting home on Saturday at 3:30 to watch it, but I'll be following it. And trying to see who we have before our next show, if there's anything really worth watching. That's really it. If we do a Christmas show, we'll talk about what's coming up into New Year's. A couple of quick ones that I like. I think Cincinnati Duke will be a fun game. I think it'll be a more fun basketball game. But it's called the Belk Bowl. What exactly is a Belk? And why is it hosting a bowl? Just out of curiosity. And Baylor-UCLA should be a good game. Should be a fun game to watch. UCLA has really made a great recovery on their Jim Mora. A pick that no one really anticipated would be. It almost seems like a kind of a fallback pick. But Mora's done a great job, and UCLA was very close to ending up in the Rose Bowl this year. Rutgers-Virginia Tech. Nah, not bad. Virginia Tech has been incredibly disappointing. I'm not sure how motivated either team will be. The game that I know most of our listeners are going to look forward to, West Virginia-Syracuse in the New Era Pinstripe Bowl in Yankee Stadium. There's going to be an article this week on Back Sports page where I'll get to that in a second. But my pick for the score was 98-97. I took West Virginia. I know. Pretty much whoever's listening is now going to be shutting off the radio in disgust. But it should be a fun game. Texas-Oregon State is a good game. And that pretty much brings us into New Year's. LSU-Clemson should be a very good game. I actually took Clemson. I figure an ACC team has to beat someone legitimate at some point. I don't know who, but it seems as good as any. I think LSU has been overrated this whole year. They're the fourth best team most likely in the ACC, in the SEC. And Clemson's offense is really good, and LSU's is not. It's just time for something along those lines to change a little bit. So, you know, where do we go from here? In the beginning of the year, we had Mike Pozeski, who is, I guess, still to a degree our college football expert. And Sean and myself, and we picked our national title game. And the teams that were picked were Wisconsin and Oregon, which was mine. And that was only finished the first week of the season when Wisconsin lost to Oregon State. USC, Virginia Tech, which was so bad that I'm not even quite sure where to even go with it. And I want to say Oklahoma, Florida State, something along those lines. I forget, but pretty much neither. I had the closest, but I wasn't very good in Oregon, which I still believe is the best team in the country. I have no doubt, actually. Oh, I shouldn't say I have no doubt. I think they're the best team in the country. You know, they lost to a very, very good Stanford team in overtime. It happens. But, no, the SEC champion will always get the benefit of the doubt. And to a degree, they should. Do I believe that Notre Dame is one of the five best teams in the country? No, I don't. Actually, probably about fourth or fifth. But they belong there. And I don't really know I don't really think you can argue Alabama. I think Alabama was a fine choice. You know, I had a bigger argument last year with them over Oklahoma State because I thought Oklahoma State was a much more legitimate choice, regardless of Alabama's whipping of LSU in the national title game. But here I have no real argument. So, you know, what are we looking at here? I don't know. I actually just lost my train of thought. Oh, okay. So I was actually at a family event, and I was talking with my cousin, who is a very knowledgeable 13-year-old college football fan. And he roots for Michigan, which is going to be tough because South Carolina is going to beat them badly. But we were talking about it, and I said, you know, we didn't do very well with our picks. He said, well, maybe I can do our picks. Maybe I can pick better than you guys. So there's going to be up next week, there's going to be an article, and he picked every game. Mike, Sean, and myself have gone from around Christmas going forward. And we're going to see if we are smarter than a 13-year-old. For those of us who know Sean and myself, you know the answer to that. Mike still has a chance. So we'll see what's going on. College basketball is just not – it's nobody's there yet. We were going to do a preview, then unfortunately I had to miss – I had to miss a show or two, and then Sean has missed a show or two. And so we didn't really get to do the preview that we wanted. And I think that's something we're going to hit on much harder after the new year, especially with hockey kind of being, well, hockey. And, you know, where do you go from here? You know, where does hockey even go from here? Yeah, I'm not sure which is going to be done first, the NHL lockout or the fiscal cliff. Yes, that's as much politics as I'm bringing up, or tax work as I'm bringing up. So, it's, you know, what are we looking at here? We're looking at an NBA season, which has been enjoyable. Living in New York, it's been a lot of fun watching this rivalry grow. As many of you know, we did a poll. I'm a New Jersey boy originally. And we did a poll saying, you know, because the Nets had moved to Brooklyn, what team should I root for? And there were a few teams that were exempt. I will not root for the Knicks. I will not root for the Heat. I can't root for the Sixers, the Pistons. We exempted 8 teams. So I was stuck with the Milwaukee Bucks. Well, the Milwaukee Bucks are doing pretty well. So I now wear an old Glenn Robinson jersey to do a lot of these shows. But what are we looking at here? Knicks leading the conference at 18-6. My concern with the Knicks is the team has been brilliant so far. There's no question about this. Woodson has been phenomenal. Carmelo has been great. The contributions from everyone, from Chris Crawford last night, even in the loss, scoring 29. You know, they've done this without Amari Stoudemire. The problem that I see, it's actually an interesting problem. I don't see it as a problem in the playoffs. I see it as a problem in February and March and April. When you have Jason Kidd and, you know, 38 going on 60. And, you know, Kurt Thomas. You have all these, you know, Marcus Camby's obviously not getting too much burn. But it's a very old team. And when you are facing a team that can run and move, like the Houston Rockets, it's going to be a difficult situation for them. How big a fall do I see them winning 50? I do. Do I see them as a legitimate threat to Miami? Well, they've beaten them twice badly. It's kind of hard to argue against it. And, you know, but do I see them as one of the best teams in the league? Yeah, they're obviously one of the best teams in the league, but I don't see them as a championship caliber team. Unfortunately, the team that I took to win the championship is my two teams are currently 12-11 and 11-14 because I'm an old school guy and I took the Celtics and the Lakers. And that certainly hasn't paid off. But there have been surprises. Atlanta has been very good, you know, 14-7. You know, this is a team that you thought was clearing space. They get rid of Joe Johnson. Josh Smith hasn't been re-signed. Supposedly they were going to make a run at Howard. And Danny Ferry wanted to rebuild this team, and it's quicker. Jeff Teague has been very, very good. You know, but it's a very mediocre division, mediocre conference. It was funny. There was a thought that this was going to revert back to kind of the last several years. It's obviously been weaker. But we thought that the East was making a comeback, and they're reverting back to being in the middle of nowhere. I should say, if anyone wants to call in, I'd love to talk. It's kind of hard to talk by yourself. So if anyone wants to talk, wants to give a ring, 760-283-0846. Love to have you on. The Chicago Bulls have hung nicely, you know, without Derrick Rose. And having re-signed Taj Gibson to a ridiculous 5-year, I want to say $45 million deal. He's a nice player, but man, it's one thing when your stud's getting 15 a year. It's another when your fourth or fifth best player is getting 10. I don't quite get it. Brooklyn has been solid, 13-10, and they're just going to get better. They've lost a couple really bad games. What have been the big disappointments? Well, obviously the Celtics, the Lakers, Indiana. But in the West, you really have – the West is still the strength. Oklahoma City, the Clippers. It always sounds weird saying the Clippers. Oklahoma City's recovered nicely from the Harden deal. Kevin Martin's still a nice player. And Kevin Durant is Kevin Durant. Russell Westbrook is Russell Westbrook. The team I want to talk about is, did you ever think you would – when was the last time you would talk about Golden State being 16-8? This is a team – not only are they 16-8, they're 10-5 on the road. This is a team that I would bet over the last 2 years may not have won 10 games on the road. I guess this is what happens when you get healthy and you have Stephen Curry and, you know, and they're not even healthy because Boga hasn't really been back. So I don't really know what to make of this team. I don't see that. I don't obviously see this trend lasting, but it's really, what an extraordinarily impressive performance by Golden State. You know, we're dealing with the issues in regards to Minnesota. Kevin Love is now complaining he wants out. Well, Kevin, you re-signed a four-year contract last year. So, you know, let's take a step back. Should the Lakers trade Pau Gasol? He doesn't seem to be fitting. And I'll tell you, I'm surprised. I thought the Lakers would work with D'Antoni's offense. I did. You know, it just hasn't gelled. You know, Dwight Howard has not been great. Kobe's actually been fantastic. But Kobe realizes, you know, he's kind of at the zenith of his career. And, you know, he's not going to be traded. He's not going to, you know, he can't be the guy shooting the ball 45 times. And that's kind of the feel that it is. You know, Steve Nash hasn't been there. Howard has not acclimated well. And it's been a tough run for the Lakers. Well, I mean, they're in 11th place, 12th place, geez, in Western Conference. Do I think that'll hold? Now, when Steve Nash comes back, they'll be better. But they're just not what I thought they would be. But you're looking, it's been a solid start to the season. It's just very difficult and I live in a city which has really been basketball frenzy all year because number one of the burgeoning New York Knicks, Brooklyn Nets rivalry. And number two, not only is there supposedly a rivalry now, but both teams are good. But this is a country that's run on football. And until football is done, or at least the regular season is done, the NBA kind of takes a back seat. You know, college basketball, I'm watching Kansas-Richmond right now, really hasn't materialized, although I am admittedly loving my Terps right now. We're 9-1, haven't beaten anybody, but anyone who's watched us understands how good we think we can be. So we're about halfway through the show, which is not bad. I haven't taken a breath yet. I haven't taken a water. Should I do a promotion for my CPA and financial advisory firm? Nah. Well, Sean's given out my phone number before. Of course, he gave it out for any random 28-year-old brunette, which I thought was a bit strange. But yeah. So I should probably have a 2-minute song. Maybe I'll have do we have the Gangnam Style playing now? No, it didn't play. I was going to take a 30-second break. Which would have been late. Open Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. 낮에는 따사로운 인간적인 여자. 커피 한 잔에 여유를 아는 품격 있는 여자. 밤이 오면 심장이 뜨거워지는 여자. 그런 반전 있는 여자. 강남 스타일. Okay, I needed about a 1-minute break. Number one, to figure out what I was going to do with the last 25 minutes of the show. Number two, because after talking for 35 straight minutes, my mouth's a little tired. So, where do we go from here? Well, I think we're going to talk a little bit about our athletes of the year. We'll do this in more detail, but I'll probably touch a bit more on, you know, what Sean and I are not going to hit on in 2 weeks when we kind of do our year in review. You know, the sports which are more, I guess, accentuated towards myself. Sean's obviously a bigger baseball guy. Oh, that's what I actually wanted to talk about. I hadn't touched on the R.A. Dickey trade. R.A. Dickey, the best story to come out of New York baseball in a long time, traded, winning the Cy Young, actually the cover of Sports Illustrated, in regards to the sexual abuse he suffered when he was a kid. Pretty amazing story. And he, out of nowhere, he was a nice number two, number three pitcher. Came out of nowhere and won a Cy Young for the Mets this year. Traded to Toronto. And I know the Mets fans are sad about it, but I think they realistically understand it with the right move. This is a team that is 2 or 3 years away at a minimum, 2 or 3 years away from really being playoff relevant. They got one of the best catching prospects in the country in baseball in Travis Dionneau. Do they really need a 36-year-old knuckleballer? Probably not. The funny part is obviously a knuckleballer can pitch forever, as we saw with Phil Niekro and Tim Wakefield, who may still be pitching. What is he, 58, 59? These guys pitch actually, of course, I'm kidding. But, you know, Tim Wakefield, I think, ended up being the all-time leading wins guy for the Red Sox. When you look at the team, you know, the players they've had, Clemens, and Lefty Grove, and Babe Ruth was only for a couple of years, and Pedro Martinez, and Josh Beckett. I mean, you really wouldn't think that Tim Wakefield, of all players, would be there. But it does make sense. This team is 2 years away. You know, after this year, plus their ownership situation is still, you know, a little tenuous at best. Jason Bay is cut. Even though I think his contract was guaranteed for another $16 million. That's how bad he was this year. You know, so Toronto's kind of developing a powerhouse up in the AL East. You know, bringing in Josh Johnson, bringing in the shortstop Reyes. You know, this is a team that's built for now. I think that what they're saying is they're looking at this division. The Red Sox are very young and not very good and made some very strange, strange pickups. Shane Victorino for $40 million. There's one or two others that are escaping me at the moment. You know, these are not the kind of players that you're going to pick up at this point, although Victorino was the Flying Hawaiian was always a nice player. But this isn't who you're looking at, what you're looking at, you know, to build a championship team. The Yankees, I think everyone admits, are in a lot of trouble or in a lot of turmoil. We don't know where the Yankees don't. The only solid pitching that you know, well, actually, it's not even the pitching. With the re-signing of Kuroda, the expectation that Pettit's going to return, Sabathia is solid, Hughes is pretty decent, and the hope is Michael Pareto will actually become something. You're looking at a team hitting-wise that's just old and overpaid. And it was a conversation years ago, obviously well before Back Sports Page, well before the Seth and Sean show. The second that A-Rod, you know, declared for free agency in 2007, 2008, they should have just let him walk. Now, it's easy to say in hindsight, and he did win them the World Series in 2009. But 5 more years at $30 million per, if the Steinbrenners are going to really get to the salary cap of $189 million by next year, you know, between that and Teixeira, who has just not turned out to be the, you know, nice player, but has not turned out to be the hitter that you anticipated, especially in the playoffs. You know, they're a team that you look at and say, geez, these guys pile up home runs. And I used to say that's about Swisher, Nick Swisher. Although I don't think he has an A-Rod to a degree. These are guys who hit home runs when you're up 6-2. And, you know, Robinson Cano is going to ask for a monster contract next year. And with Scott Boris as his agent, you know he's not going to take a hometown discount. You have to sign him. So what are you looking at? You go around, you know, Teixeira is there for another 4 years at 20 million and change. Cano is going to have to be re-signed. Jeter has another year or two, although, you know, Jeter just seems to keep going, so it doesn't really make a difference. You know, that you're having to look at pick, you know, they picked up Kevin Youkilis, which is just strange. Just once again proves how little the rivalry matters between the players as opposed to the fans. I mean, Youkilis is obviously a nice player, but it was kind of when the Yankees signed Johnny Damon, you know, the Red Sox have done the same over the years. It's just a weird feeling to say, weird thing to say. But, you know, the outfield, I mean, do you sign Granderson to a big deal considering he hits 230 and strikes out 180 times? You know, good power hitter, class act, great clubhouse guy, but not sure really that's what you're going to do. You know, Gardner you have for another year. It's a team, anyway, it's an old team. It's not a team you look at and say, wow, that is a championship caliber team. Baltimore, I don't know what Baltimore is. I just think Buck Showalter is a heck of a coach. You know, they did make the playoffs last year. I don't think anyone sees them as an overwhelming favorite. And even Tampa Bay, with all their pitching and their youth and their hitting, they're right in the front of it. But Toronto is right there right now. Now, the one thing I would want to warn people before everyone jumps on the Toronto bandwagon is, you know, last year another team did this, where they went all out and went to sign, you know, sign the big names and traded for the big names. One of them is the Florida Marlins, who then within 8 months unloaded the entire team, fired their manager, and ended up, I want to say, around 65-95. The other is the California Angels, or the Angels of Anaheim, where not only did they pick up Pujols and C.J. Wilson, they also ended up bringing up to possibly the best rookie in the history of Major League Baseball, and Mike Trout still didn't make the playoffs. So, what do they do? They signed Josh Hamilton, 5 years, $125 million. Pretty reasonable contract, actually, I would think. I think it's a fair contract on both sides. Excuse me. But you're looking now. Is anyone else seeing a real parallel with the Dodgers and Angels currently of what the Yankees and either the Mets or the Red Sox were 5 or 6 years ago? I mean, that Angel lineup of Trout, Pujols, and Hamilton is terrifying. You know, it's absolutely terrifying. But, you know, at the end of the day, they still didn't make the playoffs last year. You know, the Dodgers have spent $897 billion. And not only did they not make the playoffs, I don't think they were over 500. And the team that won that division ended up winning the World Series. So, you know, we know in baseball that the biggest contracts, the biggest salaries doesn't always lead to the biggest wins, to the most value for such contracts. You know, the Yankees, for all, you know, the contracts they have won championship over the last 10 years. So, no, that's our little baseball thing. And as you said, we're not going to really talk college hoops tonight. So what are we going to talk about? We got about 15 minutes left. Well, I guess we're going to talk, I guess, a little bit about some of the other sports that we don't really discuss very often. You know, maybe just a little bit of a player of the year kind of ideology. You know, we don't talk MMA because, to be honest, that's not Sean's thing, and that's fine. And the reality is the MMA has really plateaued this year, partially due to the injuries and partially due to there's just too many cards. And just like in any sport, you want to see the top people, but you don't want to be paying every pay-per-view every 2 weeks. It gets tiresome. And when we do our top 10 of the, or next week, I'm going to be on Manhattan, or I guess in 2 weeks, Manhattan News Network. I do my annual year in review with Nabate Isles, who does a great, great TV show, which I think everyone should check out if you're living in New York City, at 9 o'clock on Wednesday nights. I've been doing the show for the last 5 years. Nabate and I know each other from ESPN. He's a good dude. He actually works for the Jets now. He does some work with the Jets now. And he hates MMA with a passion. Loves boxing, hates MMA. And we started talking a little bit about it. And for the first time in years, there's really no one in the mixed martial arts world or the boxing world who deserves that top 10 status. I'm not going to give it to Juan Manuel Marquez because, yes, he, you know, the knockout of Pacquiao was sensational, but the reality was he was losing the fight. He was going to lose that fight. And, you know, they're past their prime. As great a fight it was, and it was fantastic. I wish I saw it live, which I usually do, but I just really didn't have an interest in it, which says a lot because I am a big boxing guy. So there's no boxing guy that's going to be in the top 10. You know, Nolito Donaires would be my fighter of the year, who most of you don't know. Probably 90% of you don't. And you know, that kind of says it all. Who's a fighter of the year in MMA? It's a woman. It's Ronda Rousey. You know, maybe Benson Henderson, who's been really, really good, winning for defending his. But he only debatably won. You know, won one of his matches in a rematch over Frankie Edgar for the lightweight title. You know, you dominated Nate Diaz when Nate Diaz is not a great fighter. So, you know, what are you looking at here? Golf? Yeah, Rory McIlroy will be there. He's been the best. He's the best golfer in the world. I don't think there's much question about that. Tiger, you know, Tiger's just not Tiger. And he never will be again. Now, will he hit the 18 Masters or the 18 Grand Slams? Probably not. It doesn't seem like it's going that way, but I'm sure Rory McIlroy will be in our top 10. Tennis wise, it was a pretty amazing year. I remember Steffi Graf winning, you know, the Grand Slam and the Olympic, but even, I don't even think I've ever seen anyone as dominant as Serena Williams was at the Olympics. I thought that was great. I thought Andy Murray finally winning the Olympics and then winning the U.S. Open, I thought was a great story. You know, we're back to having a big four if Rafi Nadal can stay healthy. You know, Djokovic is still the best. Roger Federer is amazing. But it's good to see Andy Murray kind of come into this after all this time. You know, so many finals losses. And I'm going to be honest, I didn't think he would do it. I didn't think he had it in him to beat Djokovic in the final. But, so I think, you know, tennis, we may have one or two. Now, what else are we looking at? Baseball, I'm sure we'll talk a little Cabrera. There'll be a little bit of Mike Trout. You know, there's going to be a lot to talk about when we do our year interview, both on the TV show with Nabate and the one that I do with, that I'll probably do around January 2nd with Sean. And yeah, it's about 50 minutes in. I think, I kind of want to give – you know, I haven't touched on Newtown because, to be honest, I'm not really sure what I'm supposed to say. You know, we've seen so many things, and, you know, I occasionally do kind of talk about my political views, but, you know, in general fashion. I don't think this is the time or the place. This is certainly not the place for it. And, you know, while I find it really nice that, you know, all these players, you know, they write Newtown on their sneakers and they do these, you know, this thing and the other thing. At the end of the day, I'm not, you know, I guess it's a nice thing to do. I don't quite, you know, if it makes them feel better, then I think that's fine. You know, I mean, I don't blame them for doing it. I don't think it's a bad thing that they do it. I just don't really, you know, see the value. The one thing that I did think was great, if you guys haven't heard, was Victor Cruz. Apparently one of the kids who died, his favorite player was Victor Cruz. So Cruz, and he wanted to be buried in a Cruz jersey. So Cruz sent him, I think it was the cleats and the gloves and all that. And then he actually flew back to Connecticut to attend the funeral today, which I thought that was pretty amazing. Victor Cruz, I don't know if I've ever seen someone just jump out of nowhere quite like he has. I guess actually Jeremy Lin did even more. But Cruz, you know, is really followed with a solid sophomore year, second year, and, you know, he'll get the big contract that he deserves. And he's a class act. The other thing I wanted to mention was the retirement of probably the greatest boxing writer of all time, probably the best boxing analyst of all time, in Larry Merchant. After 35 years with HBO, he retired on Saturday night. He's done everything from the NFL to college football to real sports. And my favorite comment with him was when Floyd Mayweather, challenged him that he didn't know anything about boxing. And, Floyd is Floyd because Floyd likes to talk. And, well, Larry Merchant turned around and said to him, if I was 30 years younger, I'd kick your ass. Or maybe it was 50 years younger, I'd kick your ass. I think I can say ass on this on Blog Talk Radio. If not, if it's one of the seven banned words, then I got a whole other set of problems. So he's retiring. I'm not sure if he's being forced out. He's in his mid-80s, early 80s, but he's still as sharp as ever. And he'll be missed. And as someone who watches boxing pretty often, or whenever there's something worth watching, which has been less and less, unfortunately, you don't always agree with him, but you liked hearing what he had to say. So I think it's about 50, we're about 7 or 8 minutes to go, and I think I'm going to call it a night because my throat's getting a little sore. I'm not going to lie. But I appreciate everyone listening, as always. Have a great weekend. Have a Merry Christmas. And Sean and I will be back next week, in 2 weeks. We'll be back at some point pretty soon. So for Seth and Sean, this is Seth Kamen's Back Sports page. Seth and Sean, have a good night, everybody.